Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Well, hello, brains, and welcome back home to On the Edge with April Mahoney, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. And we have another amazing guest, a podcaster. Imagine that. Andrea Pudding. I like that. Pudding. It's Puddings. Am I saying that correct? Puddings, not pudding like jello pudding, but Puddings like I'm putting something in the oven, correct?
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm so excited to have her. Friends, let me tell you, this woman is really on a social mission. That's the name of her podcast, Social Mission Revolution. She's doing it. And guess what? She's got a 47-year-old bird. That bird is fascinating me. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about her work as an author, as a speaker. She's doing some great things there in Australia. Let's welcome her on the edge, Andrea Pudding.
Thank you, Michael.
It's a pleasure to have you, my sweet thing. So tell us a little bit about who you are and how you show up in the world.
Well, I am a speaker and author, as you said, and a podcaster, and I love all things around social mission. So that's kind of my passion, my life is all about that, and how we can build community through using social mission in our lives. So when I talk about social mission, I'm talking about being things that we do that are altruistic, that are for the good of others, for good of the community, that really make a difference to the other person, to the way that we live and to the world.
Well, it's still kind of ambiguous to me when you say, you know, what we do to the world. What are you pouring into people? I mean, exactly what is the takeaway?
The takeaway is that when we give of ourselves, we find true fulfillment and joy in life. So what I've found is that from my own experience, that when I do something for somebody else, mm-hmm. I get more fulfillment and joy out of that than I do if I do something for myself. So it's around...
That's not me all the time. Being 100, I do. You know, I'm a very giving person. I totally get that, and I understand being of service because I am of service. But when I give of myself, there's some ROI that I'm expecting. There's a warm fuzzy. What is all of this, before you continue, what does it do for you? How does it make, you know, does it make you feel powerful? Does it make you feel strong? Does it make you feel useful? Do you feel spiritual? Do you feel enlightened? What does it do for you when you give other people? Everybody's got to get, you know, they got to get off on it on some kind of way.
Yeah, and that's true. All of those things that you just said, yes, they're the things that we get back. So if we go into giving or doing things for other people, then, which can be a wide range of things, from volunteering to donating to whatever it is, those are the things that bring us great fulfillment in life. And when they've done research on this, they've actually found that that's the fact, is that giving, or even thinking about giving of something that's of value to you, lets off those things in the brain that are triggered when you're having sex.
Well, hell, I might as well just give away the store. Well, it does, you know, but it does, seriously. It sets off endorphins. you know, in your brain. It excites you. It exhilarates you. And I'm like that, you know. So I was giving you guys a hard time. But everyone that knows me or has been a guest on my show or, you know, a homeless person on the street know that I'm a giver almost to a fault. But that is when you live the life of abundance, Andrea, is when you are able to give. And that doesn't mean necessarily of money, but that is of your time, tiding of your time, your energy, your resources. But giving sometimes has its limits. People take advantage of you. People can use you. And then you get yourself in a situation where you may say, oh, well, you've taken advantage of me. You've used me. But along those same lines, you've opened yourself up so freely, and people expect that from you. How do you help, you know, people in your community gauge a healthy balance with this giving?
Yes, and it's something that I've really been contemplating just in the last couple of weeks, to the point I just started to do an article on it, is the difference between self-sacrifice and selflessness. And finding that balance between the two. And I had this image in my mind that self-sacrifice is, if you can imagine a bucket and, you know, it's being filled, but there's holes in it. And it's just, the water just, it flows out and you don't maintain any yourself. Whereas selflessness, it fills your bucket to abundance and overflows. And so you've still got to fill bucket, but it just keeps flowing out. So, yeah, finding that balance between the two is a real art, I think.
Well, it's a very delicate dance.
Yeah, extremely delicate. So it's just, I think if we feel into something, we know whether it's going to feel us. Does that bring us joy? Mm-hmm. Will that bring us joy to be able to do that? Or is there this sense of, well, maybe obligation that I need to do this, that I have to do this for somebody else? Mm-hmm. And I often think that's where the line comes. Am I doing this for something else, or am I doing this because it's what I want to do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, no, that's like me. I had to pull back because I was a huge volunteer, and I would volunteer for 3, 4, 5 major projects a year. And then I found myself getting a little bit resentful. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, it wasn't the cause, but it was the obligation. It was the time. And I would find myself giving more than the actual facilitator of the event. So I said, okay, how do I find a balance here? So now when I volunteer for an event, I give them a block of hours. Mm-hmm. You know, 80 hours, and you better use them wisely. You want me at the front door, you want me to make phone calls. That way I feel that I have given, I've fulfilled, but I also feel that I have not overextended myself. Now, you work with small and medium-sized businesses as well. Tell me a little bit about the work that you do with them.
Well, I'm very passionate about community. Community is one of my core values. So what I see is this need, this importance of building community within a business. Because without that, we tend to lose track. We have people working together who aren't connecting to each other. And it all becomes a quite, solo. We work in solos rather than community. So through finding, and then we have a whole lot of stuff happening where people are just kind of, it opens the doors for bullying. It opens the doors for people burning out, and you find there's no real loyalty and commitment from people in that kind of community. Kind of workplace. So when we build people together in community and have them connecting with each other on a personal level, we start to connect the dots, the pieces.
Too funny. So, Brains, we had a little technical difficulty, but that's okay. We're going to pick up where we left off. I was talking to Andrea Pudding, and we were talking about the sense of community. But before you continue, you know, here in America, I remember going to a meeting. And the woman was saying at the meeting that the sense of community and friendship and camaraderie is really a lost art. And so now the culture of kindness is coming back into the workplace. When you say community, what do you mean? Do you mean a sense of caring for one another, support for one another? You know, again, because there's boundaries there. Some people don't like the warm fuzzy. Sometimes they just want to go in 8 o'clock, get out at 5, and nothing in between. What do you mean by building a community?
Building a community in the workplace is about people finding a place where they feel valued for who they are. Mm-hmm. And to do that, they need to feel a connection with other people. They need to feel like the person that they're working with actually cares about who they are and what's important to them. Mm. We need to be able to build that sense of, this is a place that I want to come to, that I want to belong to, and where I can make a difference, I can contribute. So I call it the ABC of community, because I think that every person needs to have a sense of acceptance, a place to belong, and an opportunity to contribute. Now, of course, in the workplace you contribute, but you've got to be able to contribute what makes you feel good.
Right.
And there's plenty of workplaces who I think are still living back in the industrial era, where the boss is, you know, the person, and no one else gets a say in anything.
They rule with an iron fist.
Yeah, yeah. I have a great analogy with that chocolate, sharing chocolate with that. It's like they keep all the chocolate to themselves. And then there's another kind of leader who only dishes out the chocolate as a reward. And then there's the other leaders who just share the chocolate with everybody in an opportunity to grow and develop together. So building the community is really about to build the community that has a workplace where people are loyal and contribute. We have to build in the acceptance, the belonging, and the contribution. So that contribution can be a case of we bring people to the table and we develop and create this business together. We develop and create innovative ideas. But, of course, my favourite is that, hey, what is it that's greater than this business that we can do in the world? So what is the social mission of this business? How can we develop? How can we give a bit of our time, a bit of our energy, whatever it is, because social missions can differ according to whoever you are. What is it that we can do that's going to make a difference outside of just our everyday business? And I find those are the things that really inspire people in the workplace to come along, even if they've got a really dull, boring job. It gives them that inspiration that what I do makes a difference.
Right. Absolutely. And you have to have a purpose. You know, if you're picking up trash on the beach. Yeah. There's a purpose behind that. And you have to feel a sense of belonging. I get that, you know, with community, because you spend 40 to 50 at a minimum hours a day with the people that you work with. But how do you bring on management? How do you convince upper management of the significance of this? You know, because they want that machine to run. But if your employees are not happy, it's like having no gas in your car, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And 8% of employees worldwide are disengaged or disinterested in the workplace. So it's massive. It's a massive problem. Yeah, so that is one of the things. It's things like that. It's like when your employees are not feeling it, let's put it that way.
Right.
They aren't going to be engaged. Your profit's going to be suffering. Your productivity is going to be a lot lower than what it could be. And the fact is that 70% or more businesses are not reaching their full potential. And, you know, I think there's a great correlation in the numbers that, that say that this is why, is that when people aren't working and don't care, if they don't really care about your business or where you're going or what the future is,
right,
then they're not going to put in their full potential.
And so they're not going to invest in your business, and your employees are your investment. They are your investment. And if they're not, you know, again, gung-ho, there's not going to be any profit sharing, not going to be a Christmas party, all of those things. But a lot of that has changed. A lot of that has changed. There used to be, and I can speak, you know, from my corporate experience, I don't know what it's like now. I haven't worked in corporate America, and I can't remember when, and I'm so glad I can say that. But it wasn't a bad thing. But it was a point where they really invested in the employees. They brought in trainers. They brought in, we had a masseuse that would come in for wellness. There was off-site events. There was team builders. There was employee health seminars. There was cross training. It was a lot of money put into the employees from upper management and human resources. And I've had some of the best human resources people. But when you don't have those resources and you're in a small, mid-sized company, how do you develop a sense of community? I mean, what are some suggestions that you would offer?
You see, now I bring chocolate coffee to everything.
Exactly. Bring some chocolate.
Yeah, chocolate and coffee. I find that by using techniques like this, it's just building those relationships to start with, building that sense of understanding the next person. So finding that acceptance within the community that we are, just to bring them in and go, hey, we really do work together. We really do have these things in similarities. And understanding those values that are the same between us and what the values are of the business. Working with those and building up those opportunities to connect with each other. I mean, it doesn't have to be an expensive thing. I mean, of course, we'd all love a masseuse to come in.
It was awesome. We're talking about also cultural competencies. Everybody's going back to work now after COVID, and you're going to be looking at your neighbor next to you with a side eye. Is this person vaccinated or they're not? Are they wearing a mask or they're not? That's caused a divide. I get that. But also, really engaging in cultural sensitivity between men and women, different types of, age, ethnicity, all of that has to, again, be streamlined. And like you said, just coming together and having lunch together, just maybe sitting outside and having the meeting outside. We used to do that outside in the courtyard, taking you out of that environment. You don't have to go far, but just taking you out of that four walls or those cubicles. Asking questions. Do you have that in Australia, bring your child to work day?
No.
Oh, we did. That was so fun. Because, again, you get to meet the little person that your employee or the CEO is going home to, and that little person is coming in and getting engaged and finding out what mommy and daddy actually do. So there are a lot of things that you can do to create this culture of community without spending a lot of money, without going out or actually bringing people in, and rewarding and recognizing your employees. Everybody wants a pat on the back.
Appreciation
is so important. Appreciation. I lost
your audio. Appreciated.
There you go. I lost your audio. I'm sorry. What did you say, baby?
Appreciation is really an important key to it, and appreciating people in the way that they feel appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
So then that comes down to, if we don't know who our employees are, if we don't know who the next person is at a core level, then we're not going to be able to speak to them. And we won't understand that maybe the reason they had to take a day off was because they've got an elderly parent or something. You know, we need to know people's backstories to be able to work side by side with them. Absolutely. At a level that really helps them to grow and understand.
So now tell us a little bit about chocolate and coffee breaks. Where did you come up with that concept? Because I can tell I should have sent you some chocolate. I'm going to send you some chocolate because I can tell you like it. Ooh. Do you eat dark chocolate or milk chocolate?
Well, at the moment, I'm eating
I know, and every dark chocolate is different, but I'm a milk chocolate. And then there's the imposter, the white chocolate. But it's good, too.
I like them all.
So how did you come up with this concept?
Well, chocolate and coffee, right. But what happened was there was an event in Australia, in Sydney, where a gunman walked into the Lindt Chocolate Cafe in Sydney and took the patrons and the staff hostage, so 18 people. And it was over 24 hours. But he was carrying his ISIS flag. And he was claiming that he was doing this in the name of Allah. Now, this was a big shock in Australia because we don't expect this kind of thing to happen. And it was just, and we all just kind of sat glued to our screens all day, seeing how would this unfold. What ended up happening was the gunman and two innocent victims died that day. Now, in the aftermath, it was like everyone held their breath. It was like, what was going to happen? Would the Muslim community be blamed for this? Would there be retaliation against the Muslim community? But something happened. There was this slow, quiet roar on social media of the hashtag, I will ride with you. So people were reaching out to the Muslim community and saying, if you don't feel safe, I will ride the train, the bus, the ferry with you so you can get from where you need to be. So there was this outpouring of love instead of retaliation. People knew that the Muslim community had nothing to do with this and they really caught hold of this. And this kind of just sat with me for a long time, expecting that this would be a change in the way people reacted to other people. People would be more giving and loving. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to see this community spirit, you know, flowing out into the world. So it was about 11 months later that I kind of talked to my mum one day and said, when's chocolate and coffee day? She goes, I've never heard of it. And I was like, oh, damn, I have to start this. So I started Chocolate and Coffee Day for Religious Harmony. And this is December 15th, 2014 was when the event happened. So 2015, I started Chocolate and Coffee Day for Religious Harmony. So the idea was that you just reach out to someone who is different to you and share in these simple pleasures of life, chocolate, coffee, and conversation. Because when we just sit and talk to someone over a cuppa, bit of chocolate to open us up, we get to know each other. And the empathy comes. We get to walk in someone else's shoes. And that's the research has been done that shows that if you just listen to one person who is different to you for 1 hour, those prejudice will break down, not just to that person but to the whole social group. Wow. So just this sharing, reaching out to someone and sharing in chocolate and coffee can do amazing things for the community.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's been going on since 2015, and then people were starting to say to me, well, we need this more often. We need this is something that can go beyond just this one day. Mm-hmm. And so then chocolate and coffee breaks eventuated from that. And so it's kind of like that's why I can bring that into a workplace situation to get people to understand and talk with each other on a deeper level. but also in community. And, you know, it's something that's, there's one particular other social mission that I know where they bring people together from refugees to help them assimilate into Australia. What they've done, they started using chocolate and coffee breaks to build their community in other areas. So it's just this opportunity for people to come together and speak on a different level, because it's not about those big things that we usually say, right, when we describe each other. It's those simple things that, you know, what is it that brings you a sense of peace? You know, things like that that people don't usually talk about, which are really important to who we are.
It is, because, again, we are more alike than we are different. So tell me a little bit about the book. Are these some of the things that you've documented in your book?
Oh, well, the book that I have written was on leadership.
Was on what?
I love leadership.
Okay. This is it. Because you have to lead by example. So that's totally in alignment with what you're saying. And like I said, upper management, you know, again, they get kind of snooty. They have their butts, and you know, up in the air, and they forget about, you know, the pyramid. And the pyramid doesn't have to be like this. It should be inverted. It should be like that.
Yes, if that's the pyramid, that's the way I've always learned that's where leadership is at the bottom of the pyramid. So my book, the book that I have written and been published is Awake and Stop Leadership. And that is on leadership, and it is about that model of how we build and grow community within the business. And I do throw in a bit of the chocolate and coffee brilliance into that. And I'm currently writing another book on social mission revolution. So that's more about the stories that I talk about on my podcast. Once I've written those two books on social mission, then I might look at writing the book on chocolate and coffee breaks. So, you know, it just keeps going.
And it is. You're ever evolving. And this is a subject that has no end. You know, there has been prejudice and discrimination and segregation and separation since the turn of time. You know, there's always been a divide among individuals. And unfortunately, I don't foresee that changing. It will take on a different form. You know, I don't want to be, you know, the Debbie Downer. But when we meet aliens, we're not going to like them because they're green or whatever. There's always going to be something. But what I like for people to do is I like for them to leave space for acceptance and for dislikes. I always use this example. My dear sweet mother loved okra. And every time we made greens, collard greens or mustard greens, she had to have okra with it. I can't stand okra. I don't like it. So I never put it on my plate. And she would ask me until the day she died, I've got some greens, baby. You gonna try some okra with me? No, mama. I say that to say this, is that I didn't like it. She knew I didn't like it, but I accommodated her and I met her where she was. I gave her what she needed. And eventually I tried it and it really wasn't that bad. You know, I mixed it, you know, I fixed it up, but it wasn't something that I chose to put on my plate. But the good thing about my mother, too, she kept asking me, but she didn't force the issue. And that is something that I'm seeing in society, is that you want to force your opinions on someone. Leave me enough space not to like it. As long as I'm not bothering you, hindering you, disrespecting you, let me have the right and the space not to like something. That's a part of the boundaries. That's a part of the human experience. You know, it's not always about acculturation. Sometimes it's about assimilation, you know, and people just don't get it. They want to, you know, make you be something that you're not. So I think when we kind of get to the point where it's okay to laugh at, you know, jokes about somebody that's got big eyes or whatever. It used to be where comedians could do that. Now everyone is so hypersensitive about anything you say or do. They go from a flicker to a flame. How do we dial back? How do you think that we can maybe start just with a sense of calm to get us into the room to have a much deeper conversation?
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it?
That's the chocolate.
Yeah, it is. I say chocolate and coffee and people go, I'm in. Yeah, and often it is. It is those people who don't, who are really fighting against it, to get them to open up and see somebody for who they are. That's always the challenge. And we can all just do our best to do that. And I think, well, I actually call chocolate and coffee day my beyond the why, because I'm a white Australian. I've never had prejudice against me. So why is it so important? You know, it's not my why, it's not my experience. It's something deeper that has called me to do this, to make a difference in some way. And I never really knew why until some Muslim friends said to me, you're the perfect person to do this. And I've thought about that, and it's like, well, yeah, who is going to be the person that can talk to those people? If you went to talk to them, they're not going to listen to you. They'll listen to me. So, you know, I put like the analogy of an egg. If it comes from the outside, life is destroyed. If you smash an egg from the outside, life's destroyed. If you crack it from the inside, new life and something beautiful emerges. Mm. So I kind of think, well, how do we deal with that? Well, then people who aren't being oppressed, people who aren't the ones who are having the prejudice against them, need to start breaking down those barriers, planting those seeds in other people so that they can go, well, hey, well, okay, maybe I can listen.
Right, and ask the questions. I know we had the big upheaval with our number 45 president. Everybody was at arms and just, you know. And then with the murder of George Floyd,
yes,
that was very disheartening because people sat there and watched this man be murdered and had the nerve to question it. I just, you know, you don't believe what your eyes see, what your ears hear. So it's a matter of disrespect. It's a matter of this quote unquote white privilege. I don't think that it's a privilege to be an oppressor, to be a disrespecter, to be a brutal monster, to enslave people. That's not privilege. You know, it's barbaric. But again, to whom much is given, much is required. So mm-hmm. We are looking at this. You know, we've got the microscope on it. We're looking at it at a much deeper level. There are unfortunately necessary evils and sacrificial lambs. But with all of that, there is a new day, and we will learn from that. I just am so disappointed in us as being human beings that we haven't gotten it, and that we still judge people by the color of their skin and not the content of their heart. I don't have any control over this skin, but I choose not to be an angry black woman. You know, you can't come at me crazy. Okay, I will speak up for myself, but I make it a teachable moment. I make it an opportunity for you to ask the questions, for you to feel comfortable in a safe space, as long as you don't put your hands on me, you know. But other than that, we can have a very spirited conversation because I want you to learn, and I want to learn from you. I want to learn, you know, what is it about your culture, your heritage. You know, we've had to have a petition here in the United States to wear our hair naturally in an afro. Can you believe that? They have had to sign legislation for you to be able to go into the workplace with your natural hair. I know. And they're wasting way too much time because the millennials aren't having this conversation. They're having coffee and chocolate. Tell us a little bit about the podcast.
Well,
Absolutely.
I love that. I talk to people who are doing amazing things in the world. They are all different kind of things. So it's from individuals through to businesses who have kind of heard that call. I'm going to put it that way, whether they all put it that way or not. They've heard a call to do something greater. So they've got involved in or started their own social mission. They're doing things, well, I'll share a couple of my favourite stories. There's a lady here where I live, and she collects books. Used books that families no longer need for their children and gives them to children who are in poverty. So it's just so important to her that children get to have books as their children before they go to school, so that when they go to school, they've got that edge. They know that they've got that confidence around books, and they learn to read a lot better. And she's looked at all the statistics on that. But she's trying to change the world by making sure children learn to read. Beautiful. And people who do things like hand blankets and things out to homeless, through to businesses who are, well, social enterprises and volunteer, getting their people to volunteer one day to help different organisations, or get pro bono work, or giving a certain percentage to charities, and all these different kind of charity things that people have started. Just amazing. And these people all come from this humble place. They live in this place of humility that they have been given this opportunity to serve, to make a difference in the world. And it is just, it's just such a joy to listen to these stories of how people reached out and are making, I'm going to say, a big difference. Some of them are just simple things.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them are the most simplest things. Like during COVID, I had a friend on who just started this campaign of call a friend today, just because we were in lockdown for months in Melbourne, where I live. So it was just like every day, pick up the phone and call another friend. Just say, hey, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the most simplest of things to the most grandest scale things. So it just highlights to me that no matter who we are, we can all make a difference.
Absolutely. And you know, again, charity starts at home. You know, we need to really work with our children. We need to listen to our children, to hear what's going on in the school environment. We need to sit down at the table and put down the device and communicate with one another. Know what's going on at the husband's job. Know what the wife's had to deal with, you know, when the washing machine broke. But you take that, and then that is an extension of who you are, because your children will go out and they will become kinder, gentler people. Learn to travel. Go outside of your comfort zone, outside of your country. Take a road trip. You know, go to a museum. If you want to deal in something cultural and you don't, you know, a little intimidated about going right into that community, go to an Aborigines museum. Learn the culture of the people. Maybe watch, I do that. I watch the novellas, the Spanish channel here. My Spanish has improved exponentially. I understand the culture. I've learned a new recipe. I speak the language. And it's a beautiful thing. So there's things that you can do to be more culturally and community aware without even leaving the comfort of your home. But you have to want it. That's what we're trying to get you to do. We want you to want it. So let me ask you some other fun questions. I just am enamored, and I think I asked you about this in our conversation previously, about that tapestry on the wall.
That's a quilt.
That is a beautiful, beautiful quilt.
Yes, it's a heart-shaped quilt, and my mother made that.
That's beautiful.
Some years ago, when she was more capable of doing quilting, she kind of hasn't done much in the past several years. But she gave that to me, and I when she gave it to me, I kind of thought, yep, my heart, Why are you giving me a heart? Anyway, I put it on my office wall, and I've lived with it every day. I don't remember how long I've had it there, many years. And I now feel like I've grown into this. I've grown, it's really at the core of who I am and what my message is. And I'm just thinking, well, maybe Mum saw something in me that I didn't.
It's definitely a signature piece, and it makes a statement because you're quilting together the patchwork of people's lives. It's an intricate, detailed work of art that someone has poured their heart and soul into, you know? So it speaks to me. So keep it right there.
Yes.
But also the bird.
The bird.
Let's talk about the bird. Brain, she's got a bird that's 47 years old. I can't believe that he hasn't flown away. Tell me about the bird and where he come from and how you've been able to sustain him for 47 years.
Well, Bella is a self-accredited cockatoo, and he came to live with my family when I was very little. He'd fallen out of his nest in a windstorm.
Hmm.
So this is back in the 70s when you didn't... Like now, you would rehabilitate them, but in those days, you just brought them home and they became your pet. So he became our family pet. And my father just loved birds of all sorts. So the cockatoo was really close to him. I was the one who hand-fed him as a child and got him through into, you know, that stage where he was able to eat normal cockatoo food. Not that he ever thought himself as a cockatoo at that stage. He thought he was a cat. Really interesting creature. But anyway, so he's been in our family for 47 years. And when my father passed away, he came to live with me because I was the only other person who could ever handle him and really put any time and had that relationship with him. So Fella is... He does live in an aviary outside because cockatoos, they make horrendous, they are so loud, they just screech and they're really loud. You couldn't have it in your house. And they're also extremely destructive. So if you had them in your house would be demolished.
Wow. And they poop a lot too. I tried to have a bird. I just couldn't, you know, it's not like you can potty train them. You keep them in there, you know, and it's different. Fella seems like he is just really... He comes out, you take him and you bring him in the house, and does he interact with your children well and other family members?
So, yeah, I let him out. He wanders around the backyard and eats grass and pulls out weeds and everything else.
He doesn't ever try to fly away?
Well, he has flown a few times, and he usually gets stuck in a tree, and I have. So generally he doesn't fly. He's afraid of flying.
Do you clip his wings?
I have done that a few times, but generally, no, I don't clip his wings.
Oh.
I just kind of trust that he will stay because as long as nothing frightens him or upsets him, he will be okay. So I try not to let him out when the other wild cockatoos around. I have sometimes, and he's been fine, but they're fascinated with him. They come and visit, sit in his cage and just watch him. They're just amazed.
Does he talk?
Yes, of course he talks.
Wow. He talks.
Yes,
so
and...
You know, if you ask him, well, I don't know, how does he talk? Does he say certain things, or can you ask him something and he'll respond back to you?
No, basically he has his repertoire. Hello, fella, how are you? And
oh.
A whole lot of different stuff. And
wow.
It's really interesting to see the way he interacts with different people. Where we live, we sometimes get people walking behind and put his cage where he can talk to other people. But if he hears, he has an old man voice. So if he hears men talking from a distance, he'll start this kind of conversation. Reflecting what he hears. It's fascinating. But and then he has this different way of talking with children. He loves it when children come by. I've now got grandchildren, so they're being train to be the next caretakers of the cockatoo, because cockatoos can live up to 100 years in captivity, wow. This particular type of cockatoo. And he just goes crazy. He loves the children. He starts to dance and loves to sing. And so my grandson has started singing to him now, which is really cute, two-year-old. He sits there and sings and dances.
You're going to have to film that. They might be the next TikTok stars. You know, and I see that in Australia, I have 1, 2, 3, maybe 5 or 6 guests that have cockatoos.
Really?
Yeah. And now that you mention it, you'll see the picture of them. What is it about the cockatoo that you think is so popular? You know, here we have parakeets, we got doves. You know, the cockatoo, and probably because the cockatoo can talk.
Considered pests by farmers because they are destructive, but they're incredibly intelligent. They have the intelligence of about a 4-year-old, apparently. And they're quite whimsical. You can see, if you see videos of them around Australia, the wild ones, they'll get into things. There was one particular, they put up these barbed wire or some kind of wire on top of a building, so the cockatoo just go and pull it off. No, we don't need that. But they are they're intelligent creatures, and so they can be quite engaging,
right,
company.
Learn from them.
Yes,
we can learn from them to be engaging, to be inquisitive, to be caring, to be free. Birds are free. And I really appreciate the work that you do, Andrea, because you didn't have to do it. You know, you could commit yourself to so many other things. You know, you could be a manufacturer of chocolate. But I really appreciate you for stepping out of your comfort zone to explore and help other individuals create a sense of community, because that's huge and it's beautiful and it's very selfless. Tell Mama again, I feel her quilt. I do. And it was a labor of love. Please tell my brains how to contact you on the edge if they want to do something wonderful to create a sense of community, if they want to learn more about chocolate and coffee breaks, and also about the podcast.
Okay. So quite simply, I'm the only Andrea Putin in the world, so Google me and you'll find me. The easiest way is, I have a website called authenticinfluence.global, and if you go on there is links to my personal work, chocolate and coffee breaks, and my social mission revolution. So authenticinfluence.global.
Well, we're definitely going to put that at the end of the video, and we're going to share these links and we're going to share this video. I need you to like, love, share, and subscribe, brains, to On the Edge with April Mahoney and also Andrea Pudding. Thank you so much for popping in from Australia. Please keep me informed. Let me know if there's anything that I can do from North America to support you, because I'm in 110%, okay?
Say it,
all right, baby. Bye, brains.